Welcome to today's Purposeful Conversation. We're going to be chatting with Dadvocate Tom Petrick. Am I saying your last name correctly?
Yes.
And for those of you that may or may not know Tom, I chose Tom to be our Dadvocate this year because he has been a follower of our Facebook page, I don't know, for years, I would say. And I've never met him, but I'm excited to meet him. So Tom, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your
family? Okay, well, I've been in business, but now I'm working as a teaching and paraprofessional in a special education school in Chicago area. I have my own son who's got special needs, got other sons that don't.
You're working in the school system right now.
I am working at a private school.
Private school, okay.
Camelot Therapeutic.
Right. Well, and Tom, what I love about you, and I don't know you, so it's nice to meet you finally, is that not very many fathers participate in our parenting special needs page, and you've been active and vocal for years, and I appreciate that.
No problem. That's what I've been doing for years.
No, I know. It's been great that you do it. So anyways, tell us a little bit about your son with special needs.
My son with special needs, that's Chris. He's son number three. And he's now 25 years old. He has Fragile X syndrome, and he has an official diagnosis on top of that of ADHD, and I'm guessing probably also autism. But at that point, the Fragile X and autism tend to blend together a little bit, so it could be a little bit of both. He's gone through the public school system and went through a post-school system, a transition program. Now he's in a daycare program, a day program over here, not far from where I work. They have a day program. They do art. They've got a warehouse nearby. They've got two or three homes that they operate. So he's got a system where he can work in and still stay at home with us. So everything's pretty good for him right at the moment.
That's great. So, you know, we talk about sometimes about acceptance. Did you have to deal with any emotions or acceptance with yourself when you found out your child was first diagnosed with a disability?
Oh, so when I first found out, my first emotion was it was just a total blank. It was the start of the internet time, and you could not even find Fragile X. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what it was until a friend of mine that's a nurse sent me a note, said, you need to follow this link. And it was a link into a doctor's website that was locked to anybody that didn't have a password. And that's where I finally found out about Fragile X. And it didn't really tell me anything in words that I could really understand. Right. So now it's confusion, and we don't know what's going on. I'm calling my kids at college, one of them, saying, listen, I don't know if you've got girlfriends yet, but you know what? We need to get tested for this stuff so that we know you're not a carrier too and stuff and trying to figure out what's going on. And while I was mainly confused, it's my wife that mainly followed the emotional problems. Mm-hmm. She even now will occasionally apologize for carrying the genetics. And it's not, to me, it's not that big a deal because what happens, happens. I mean, let's back up a second. I've known my wife since I was 12, so that's 50 years now.
Congratulations.
Her older brother is also special needs. So I've been dealing with special needs kids since I was 12 years old on a face-to-face, everyday basis, not as a, they're over there kind of thing. Like right. A lot of people do. So to me, the emotion isn't so much a big thing, but the lack of knowledge at that point was beyond me. I mean, I was working for a national event at the time and I called down their office in Texas. I called down, I knew they had a corporate nurse. I said, hey, can I talk to the corporate nurse when we're done? They said, sure. Hooked me up to her. She said, I have no idea what Fragile X syndrome is either.
Well, it's not that popular, right? I mean, it's become more, you hear about it more now days because of the internet and everything, but you haven't. I mean, I know the first time I think I heard about it was something you said on a post on Facebook.
Yeah, it's not. And the problem is it's genetically, it's part of a lot of other things. I mean, you might be diagnosed as autistic, but if you got the genetic test, there might be Fragile X syndrome there too. As a matter of fact, the two, autism and Fragile X, are now working together to try to find out if there's any common denominators. So that's going on behind us, and I don't know, understand all of it any more than I understand reading all the things about what medications might work for your child. That stuff's beyond what I can understand sometimes. So
right. No, I hear you. And I think too, that's one reason. I think there's so many crossovers with the within the disability community. That's one reason why I just called the magazine Parenting Special Needs, because I think there is a lot of crossover. Like my daughter had, you know, is autistic, but you know, they thought she had several other disabilities because she's similar, but she didn't genetically test positive for those. So I think there's a lot of crossover.
And there's also a lot. Well, when Chris was diagnosed, you're going to love this story. Okay. We went to the pediatrician because first of all, I'd figured out he wasn't able to hear me because he didn't move if I clapped my hands. Pediatrician sent us to an ear specialist got put plugs in and drained them out, and lo and behold, the infection's gone. Now he can hear me, but he's still not talking. So the pediatrician gave us three referrals, two psych and one to a neurologist. So two psychs, first guy wanted to tell us that he was a midget. Realized this kid's bigger than I am now. Okay. The second one wanted to tell us that we could do this all just by diet. Okay. You're taking a kid who's 3 years old, doesn't really like being in crowds, and telling me, here's the shopping list, take him to the store and let him pick what he wants to eat. Oh. That was a very interesting experience.
Yes.
Let me tell you that if you ever want to get the rest of the neighborhood in on your problem, when your kid throws a fit in the store, lay down right next to him and throw a fit right next to him. Because I did it.
Did you do it?
I did it. I laid on the floor kicking and screaming just like he was, and finally sat up to find out what was wrong with me, and then everything went fine after that.
Oh, my gosh. So what happened with the audience? I mean, I'm not the audience, but I mean people watching. Did people say
something? People watching. People thought I was nuts, I guess. But I guess I sort of am, so I don't care. So finally, we get to the neurologist. It's been a 90-day wait to get to the neurologist because the neurologist has a program where they watch each child for 2 hours before they decide whether or not they want to take him. Literally, we walked in the door, and this woman said, okay, I think I know what's wrong right now. We have to still do this observation. We have to do a genetic test to prove it. Literally. At that time, genetic tests were not, okay, we can send in a little bit of spit and find out genetics. It was, we got to draw blood, and it was months before we knew what was going on. So it was a very interesting time, shall we say. But that woman, she has been, his pediatric neurologist has been with him until now. She just now said she's going to retire.
Wow. So,
and if somebody doesn't come into the practice, then we're working on finding somebody else to take his place, her place, but with him. But everything's going pretty good so far. Looks like somebody's going to pick it up. So.
Oh, my God. In the same pediatric office, they're going to keep
it? Same pediatric office, yeah. They don't want to lose her patients.
That's pretty luck. I mean, you're pretty fortunate because I know, like, when my daughter turned 18, her pediatric, pediatrician wouldn't accept her any longer. So, and that's rough, trying to get a new doctor and –
And it's the pediatric neurologist, of course. Well, let's go back. She, if I understand this right, she was part of the genetic program that found Fragile X in the first place.
Okay.
So she had more knowledge about it. She understands what's going on. And in fact, where he is in his day program, several of her patients are over there, son. And she still sees all of them, no matter how old they are. She understands that at a certain point, just because they're 18, and just because she's a pediatric neurologist doesn't mean that they're physically and mentally able to understand and to adapt to a new neurologist. So she's gone out of her way for us, really.
Oh, you're lucky. That's great. When I wanted to ask too, like, what's your perspective on being a special needs father? Like, I have two questions on this one, so I'll just ask that.
My perspective on being a special, I know that there are a lot of fathers that don't want to be special needs fathers. one of my son's friends. In fact, the dad left as soon as he found out the kid with special needs. She's been dealing with it by herself, mom, for, he's older than Chris, so probably about 27 years. I watched, remember how long I've had special needs in the, literally next door to me. I watched my wife's family, and they kept the child at home. They kept everything going. They kept him in programs back when there weren't school programs.
Right.
So I had a different aspect and outlook than other people did, I think. I figured that the kid was going to have to be with us, and he'd have to be part of us for as long as we live.
Right.
I mean, or as long as we can handle it. I mean, there's going to be a point, I'm guessing, that maybe we can't anymore, but I don't know what point that'll be. My father-in-law is now 88, and is my special needs brother-in-law is still living at home.
Oh.
And in fact, we recently acquired a home and bought one big enough that I literally told my father-in-law, if you guys have to go into a nursing home or something, if the kids can't go with you, I've got room for your daughter and your son.
Wow.
So we went out of our way for them. They've gone out of their way for us lately. So it's only fair.
Wow. That's great that you do that. I mean, that you can do that and that you're willing to do that. Well, so you think it's more because you kind of grew up, it was just kind of part of life. You just.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like the other people that's, you know,
it's a shock. It wasn't,
yeah. It was just part of, Jimmy was just a kid next door that you played with and swam with.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't anything different about him except for, you know, if you tried to explain something to him, he wouldn't always get it right away. And maybe we'd never even got it at all. We don't know, but, and he repeated things a lot and other things, but my having seen all that as a child made a big difference when I had to be one as an adult.
Right. And I think that's what we want for people nowadays. I mean, that's what we want for our kids nowadays with inclusion. If the kids are more open to being around them, they are more accepting.
Yep. And I see that in the when I substituted for a decade in the public schools, I saw that happening more and more. As the kids had to deal with the special needs kids inside the classroom or within at least the school, because some of them are in self-contained rooms, but they still see them at gym and stuff.
Right.
It's like they saw them more. They may not be friends with them, but they at least are able to relate to them and are able to understand. And I've actually seen them go out and help a kid when they didn't know what was going on, like out on a playground or something and a kid was being bullied. I've seen them go and stop somebody else from bothering them. So they're literally at it's right at that tipping point where the kids in the public schools that see this are just now starting to adapt to it and get used to it and make it part of their life and understanding.
Yeah, so, I agree with you. And I also think, too, because so many families have, you know, brothers or sisters or a family member with a disability, that they're becoming more aware. And I think you're right. It's like right at the tipping point. People are becoming more, you know, aware. So
yeah, we've got less of the people that come and tell you need to be meaner to the kid and more people that understand what's going on. Yeah,
right.
Slowly but surely, it's happening right now.
So I consider you an advocate. Do you advocate because you advocate on our page and you always are giving response, which I appreciate, a man's perspective, so, and a father's perspective. So what made you start being more vocal? Because like I said, I think I can count like maybe three men that normally comment on our page over the 10 years that we've had it. So you kind of stand out in the crowd.
What caused me to be more of an advocate was a woman and not my wife.
Okay.
Where my son was in grade school, they used to have, they literally had the assistant superintendent for special education was right there in the school. She was like an extra assistant principal for a while. They don't do that anymore, but at that time she was. And she decided she wanted to have a parent group that could plan trainings and conversations and meetings with other parents so that they could develop more understanding of things.
Right.
And she got volunteers right away. Woman, 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 woman. And she'd met me two or three times and she called me and said, would you come and join this? And I said, well, okay, it's one meeting for a few hours a month. And I talked my wife into it because she doesn't like I'm away a lot of times in the evening. She doesn't want me away more if I can avoid it. So I talked her into it, and I did that for, let's see, I did that from about Chris's second grade till he left for high school. So about 6 years with this woman. Mm-hmm. And so she actually is the reason that I'm more of an advocate and more willing to speak out. I probably wouldn't be if she hadn't encouraged me to. So
I think it's important.
And when, you know, that's a point here. I mean, we can go on that page and we can encourage the other dads to step up.
Right. Well, we need to. So what would you, how would you encourage them? What do you think?
Good question. I have no idea off the top of my head. How could I encourage other dads to be willing to say what they want to say without,
to help them, you know, I mean,
yeah. But I think if we just can encourage them to understand that, hey, every kid's different. And just because you know this special needs kid doesn't mean you know every special needs kid. Because you may be able to work with your kid, but when your kid goes out and winds up like my son at a day program or something, and you've got to deal with the other kids, or even during a transition, or Special Olympics, or anything else, where you've got to deal with other kids, you're going to need to know more about what's happening instead of just what's happening with your kid.
Right. And I was going to ask you, because I know, like, in, I asked another dadvocate one time about that he did have to change jobs because his situation might've been a little bit different because his child was born and they didn't know it was going to have special needs. And then he had special needs. So did you ever have to change careers or your job because you had more responsibilities at home with a child with special needs?
I changed careers, and the career I picked was teaching because I knew it would give me more time at home with Chris and my wife. I only changed because the boss where I was working decided he was going to close the business and I had to choose a new career. But when I had to make a choice, I made a choice of one that would give me more breaks and more of the time that he had off, I would be off.
Right.
If you know, that makes sense.
More flexibility.
More flexibility. And when he got older, that didn't matter so much. For 5 years, I went off in the summer and earned extra money working at a camp. So I was gone for 10 weeks all summer instead of sitting at home. But, and my understanding is that he complained the whole time, but there are certain things that only dad can do, I guess. Only dad can scratch his back. Only dad can, Only dad can go to hockey games with him. And I don't know, two or three other things. So it made a difference, I guess, but I needed that extra money at that point. So
yeah, no.
I didn't, yeah. If I had to, I'd done what I've had to do. I mean, there have been times when I've worked as a substitute teacher and as aide for special education, for special recreation, and as a instructor for archery and everything else. So I'll do what I have to do to make extra cash. Just yeah. So I can have the time with him. So yeah.
Do you, well, let's, since you started mentioning that a little bit about you teach archery.
Yep.
Is that for everyone or just children with special needs or?
Oh, I've done it for everyone. I've done it for everything from a blind kid to autistic kids to kids with more physical disabilities. Instead of mental handicaps. So I've had a lot of different kids. In fact, in 2012, I put together a booklet for the Boy Scouts on how to teach shooting sports to different special needs kids.
Wow. So is it still out there? You have to share.
It is on my computer all the time, being made larger, unfortunately. It's like every time I think I'm done, there's another thing comes up. I've gotten two or three people that kicked in with me. Somebody took part of the booklet and made it into a PowerPoint that they use at some trainings. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I do special needs. In fact, those years I worked at that camp, mm-hmm. we used to have one troop would come up from Little City in Palatine. It's all handicapped kids. And I actually had my staff convinced they would eat lunch as fast as they could and get down to the ranges we taught those kids rifle, shotgun, wow, archery, and muzzle loading rifle in 5 days.
Wow.
Or 5 years. And we do it in the time we had. As soon as they finished lunch, they'd come and they'd shoot with us. So yeah, I've done it with a lot of different kids that have a lot of different disabilities.
That's great. So now are you, so tell me about Boy Scouts. So you're active in the Boy Scouts too?
Yeah. In fact, I'm an Eagle Scout. Three of my sons are Eagle Scouts.
Congrats.
Chris is. And when I first went to the national level of the scouting program, they were just barely getting into special needs kids and working in scouting. Now they've got a whole program set up so that you can have an individual scout advancement program for a special needs kid. They've got a lot of things set up. And in fact, I went to one of the trainings. Remember when I told you how I talked to that corporate nurse?
Right.
To one of the trainings, and they literally said, "We don't know what any of these things are. Fragile X syndrome." I'm going, "Yeah, I know that one."
Yeah. Educate others.
Educate others. Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't want to sound too simplistic, so I said, "Well, yeah, that's a CGG repeat in the genetic." Talk about confusing a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Finally, I just looked around and realized how much they didn't understand. Said, it's the second most inherited version of something that would give you, in essence, mental retardation, which was still at that time in the books as the physical description. So everybody then went, "Oh, we understand."
Yeah. But,
sometimes you got to break things down to things people can understand instead of what they right. really are. Yeah.
I think most times you have to do that. I mean, I think it's, you know, everybody's got so many things going on, unless yeah, you're talk at that level.
I didn't think. I didn't think about the crowd I was speaking to at that time, you know, a bunch right. of 40 to 60-year-old people trying to learn how to run summer camps for kids, and they didn't even know that they'd get special needs kids.
Right. Oh, boy. So, when did you started doing – well, you've always been – have you always been active in – in the sports, archery, and Boy Scouts, and all that kind of stuff?
Boy Scouts, I started when I was 8 years old.
Okay.
haven't been out except for 7 years when my oldest son was growing up. All the kids are registered still, even Chris, because he can advance till he's – we have kids that get their Eagle at 45.
Wow, that's great.
Because we've set up this special needs development program. So – we've got a whole program set up so they can still fit in. So I've done that my entire life. Archery, I picked up in 1975. After that, well, I'd learned to shoot rifle when I was 12, and my grandfather kept encouraging me, rifle and shotgun. But it would have been about 77 or so, I got sent to a national camp school and was trained to be an instructor and everything else by the Boy Scouts.
Wow.
An NRA instructor through the Boy Scouts. And I've maintained that up till today. So I do that. Now I'm high enough up in the NRA, I can go out and teach other people to be instructors. So when I'm out there teaching and people to instruct, I'm teaching them. I give out that booklet that I made for the Boy Scouts.
Okay.
Listen, you may get a guy that can't. I actually have a woman in Virginia. Actually has a range. She gets people that are blind or people that can't hear that want to learn to shoot. And so I've used some of the things that they've used at her range in that book so that people have ideas of ways to help people do this.
So how do they get that book? Can they download it? Can people access it or download it somewhere? Is it only?
At the moment I'm re-updating it. Like I said, okay. When it is available, it'll be my Facebook page, the special needs stuff, is all public. Okay. So anything I write is on there. They can go look up Tom Petrick on Facebook, find me, and go to the I don't remember which it's under, notes or whatever it is. And okay. They can actually just pull up whatever I've got up there that's available. So right now I know there's two things up there. One's about sitting up and planning out what you want to have your whoever takes over for you after you something happens to you, so that your kid has some idea of what your kid does and guidance on what they should do. In fact, you guys wrote an article about it and had it posted for a while after I sketched it out. So I just remember that always. That's part of why we're such a good connection. I think of things and then all of a sudden you write about it.
That's good. Did you try to get the information out there? So
that's what I do. And every now and then I'll post that I updated it and put it out there publicly, and people come back and say, "Oh, I wish I'd known about this sooner." Well, you know,
right, well, you're one person. And so that's what we try to do too with the magazine, is get the information out there so people have access to it, whether you're an advocate, a teacher, a parent, you know, grandparent. Yeah.
Once I finish the booklet again and update it, I'll have it back on that Facebook page so anybody could come and download it and take it. So,
all right.
And it'll probably be about, let's see, it's 30
We'll attach it with this interview or this podcast.
It'll probably be July before I'm done, but okay.
Well, you can get back to me. So, all right, so what's one thing you know now that you wish you knew when you were younger about special needs? That was a loaded question.
Yeah. One thing I wish I'd known more about special needs, and I never saw this with my father-in-law, so it was the part that really got me, was all the programs. Okay, we have people write into you and they ask for help here and there, and you know what? Every stinking state's different. Every program's different. Illinois has changed their programs since I did Chris 3 years ago. I found that out last week. If I went in and tried to do the same thing I'd done 3 years ago, I'd be up the creek, because they changed the whole way they do everything. Everybody going into that day program has to have a signature from the Department of Rehabilitative Services saying that you're willing to accept less than minimum wage, whether they're paying them or not. Yeah. So which means you've got to have another meeting that I never even had to worry about.
Right.
3 years ago. So there's all kinds of things changing all the time, and I can't even keep up with all of them. And I wish I'd understood more about the transitions and the things that had to be done and the things that you had to do. And I wish I'd learned to work on them faster. A lot of the things I finally applied for Chris, I found out I could have applied when he was three with his diagnosis. And the one funding that the state of Illinois does, there's a 25,000 person waiting list. He had to get pushed up on it in order to get the funding.
Right.
So literally, if he had applied when he was three, there's a chance he would have gotten the funding automatically by the time he was 18, 22.
Right.
But because I didn't do it right away, because no one told me to do it right away. And that's the next thing I'm working on, is trying to get a list of these kind of things.
Right.
At least for Illinois. And then if we can get somebody to do it for other states, it'd be great. And when you can apply for them and what it takes, because like the PUNS funding in Illinois, if I'd known he could have applied at three, and if he'd gotten it, we could have used the money for therapies and other stuff, I would have done it. I had no idea.
No, I agree with you. And we try to say too, because like Florida has, I think there's 24,000 waiting lists too. And parents don't know to apply. And that was one thing. That's one reason why I started the magazine too, was because I found out taking out trash or something from my neighbor about, you know, this service that you should get on. I'm like, how come, like, what if I wouldn't? The story is I wanted mirrors. He was thrown away so I could do an art project. And so I got the mirrors from him. He was like, he started talking to me and told me he had a son that had autism. The child was young, so he was getting all the information. But here I am, like, my daughter's older, nothing. No one ever told me anything, you know, and I helped out in the school system. You know, you think people would know, but like nobody shares. That's why I was like, okay, we got to start talking about these things.
Yep. Well, lots of the things, I find that a lot of things, like if it doesn't apply to the teacher, like a grade school teacher is not going to worry about the things that you have to worry about when you're 22, but some of the funding they should be telling them about.
Right.
It's straight out what should be done. They need to tell you that, hey, apply now, in case your kid needs it.
And it takes a while to get it sometimes.
Oh, yeah. And the one of the other things is, okay, I don't really think that my son's ever going to wind up in a facility of any sort, any kind of group home or anything. I've arranged with my kids so that number one son's going to handle the money, number two son's going to handle the kid. so that if something happens to mom and dad, they're going to pick up the responsibilities.
Right.
But I've applied to a couple of homes anyways,
right?
Because you can always turn them down and say, no, I don't need it yet. They'll right. put you back in the list and bring you back around eventually. If something disastrous happened that took out all four of us, my two sons and mom and dad, then heck, he'd have someplace he could live. And right. we'd already applied.
So I think that's smart.
And one girl that we have through Special Olympics, she, her mother was taken away to jail, and they literally had to bounce her over 4,000 or 5,000 people to get her into a group home with her and her brother. And in fact, the lady that did it is also Chris's, one of Chris's advocates. So she literally bounced her as hard as she could into a program that would give her a place to live and eventually get her into a small job that gets her a little bit of money. So she's got some ability to continue while mom's in jail. Yeah. And she had no idea that that mom had no idea that any of this could happen, and heck, neither did I. So you've got to plan ahead for things that beyond what you think is going to happen.
Right. Cause none of us know. So yeah. What's one of the biggest lessons you've personally learned from raising a child with a disability?
Everyone will adapt.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, my wife, when my first son was born, my wife said, okay, you get to spend all your time with your son. When the second one was born, she said, you got to spend as equal time with both of them. And then Chris was born, and she's going, well, you've got to spend more time with him than with everybody else. I'm going, I think everybody will get it. If you've taught the kids that they need to understand what people go through, I think they'll all adapt and everybody will understand. And they have. I'm oldest one realized that something had to be done. And when I said, I've got to have somebody take care of the money. Okay. I don't even touch his SSI and stuff. It's all handled through that kid.
Wow.
He's the one that's going to be responsible for the money when I die. I've got all of Chris's funds are going to come from a life insurance policy that, hey, I never even thought about getting a life insurance policy and funding a special needs
trust
account for my son. Yeah, a trust for my
son. You have a trust, right? Because otherwise,
I have a trust set up.
Right.
Unfunded trust, because in Illinois, I believe you have to put down a deposit if you've got cash in it
that
the state holds. So I funded it by getting the life insurance. My mother told me to do it. I never would have thought of that.
Right.
Life insurance pays out to the special needs trust.
Yeah, you have to have it set money up that way, because we've talked and discussed in the magazine before too, that people can't leave their inheritance to your special needs child, because then that takes away their SSI. So they think they're helping, but in actuality, it can take away some of their funding.
But my kids have adapted to everything that's been thrown at them. I think the only one that's had it hardest, I think, is my youngest son. And I think that's mainly because Chris still thinks that his little brother's his big brother. I can't think of another way to put it. I mean, he literally says, if I asked him who his big brothers are, he'd say Matt, Brad, Doug. And I'd go, well, I've stopped trying to explain to him that Doug's not his big brother. But because Doug does things that he doesn't. And so Chris thinks it's his big brother.
Big brother.
So that's the hardest on him, I think, of the four of them. Doug has had the hardest time because he's had to live with him. They live with Chris the longest. The others went to college and moved on.
Right.
Doug's had it for a long time. Now he's a graduate. So now he's not going to have to put it anymore.
About Chris, do you have a proud moment you want to share with us?
Oh, I have so many proud moments. I and my kids understand that too. I've told them several times. Chris is, I don't have a favorite son, but Chris is the one I'm most proud of, because I have watched him do so many things that I didn't think he'd ever do. I mean, he started out in Special Olympics in grade school, And then somewhere in high school, he dropped out of it. And then somewhere during that transition period, the teacher convinced him to go back into it. And now he can't wait. I mean, we've got state this weekend, and he can't wait to go down to state again. He's got all kinds of medals and everything just from Special Olympics. He used to go to camp with the schools. The local special education group has its own camp here in the suburbs, where they can go boating and fishing, and they've got a small archery range. I'll take him over to my range, and I thought he didn't know anything about what's going on. He pulls out the bow, he pulls out the arrows, he starts shooting just fine. He knows exactly what to do. He understands the rules. He understands safety and everything else. And that's without my ever trying to tell him anything.
That's just from watching you?
Just from watching me and having the chance to shoot at that camp. I mean, they probably shoot for 15 minutes at that camp when they go with the school. But he's had the chance and he understands. So he's learned a lot and he does a lot. Does he have problems? Yes. Does he try to milk us for sympathy whenever he can? Of course.
I'm laughing because they're great manipulators. Like,
oh yeah. 2 weeks ago, he sprained his knee. He was still walking around with a cane last week. It was Sunday when he finally stopped and forgot to carry it with him. There he went. He's carrying the cane, but he's walking without
it. Oh, that's funny. My older daughter will tell me, isn't it amazing that Kaylee can not say most of the words properly, but curse words just come out perfectly clear, like, you know.
Oh, yeah, and they learn those really fast.
But she can't pronounce a lot of the other words correctly, but those words come out perfect. It's like, interesting.
I can remember when Chris only had like 5 words, and then he's standing at the window one day and says, gee, I wonder what those children are doing over at the park. And I said, where'd that come from?
Wow.
Said, what did you say? And he goes, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so they're good imitators. They can learn things that you'll say. That's a sentence that my mother used to say all the time. And it just came out of him all one day. He'd learned what my grandma said. And he just repeated it. Well, can I get him to repeat it now? Probably not.
No. Okay.
Right. It was the humor column. It was the last column in the news in the magazine.
Wow.
And they took him and put him in the books. He just died last year. So, but he'd given me permission to take any of them I wanted and turn them into stories for Boy Scout campfires. Man, I can tell you a story about blood sausage that will have you laughing, crying, and scared at the same time.
Wow. I have to look at that. I'm going to have to check that out. Because I like that, the outdoor magazine too, so I'll have to check that out. I know you said he's deceased. Is that what you were saying?
He died just within the last year. Yeah.
Wow.
It actually hurt me when I found out, because man, I've never had a guy that would just talk to you even though he had no idea, he'd never met me, had no idea who I was. Talked to me on the phone, talked to me in letters. He didn't care.
So did you just reach out to him? How did you get in touch with him?
I just reached out to him. I knew he was in Idaho. I found out where he was. I just sent him a letter. And then after that, we just kept sharing things. And
so is it an actual book that he put together?
There's a bunch of books he put together. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, great.
He wrote for enough years. He's probably got 7 or 8 books, yeah.
Wow. All right. Okay, so if you had a superpower, what would it be?
I would love to be able to see the future.
Yeah.
But I guess that's probably going to be one for all of us.
Yeah. And what is your favorite technology?
My favorite technology? I really enjoy when they first came out, I told some speech teachers at the school I was substituting at that this would be the ideal thing for every special needs kid to have. I said, you can put the music they want on there. You can put the movies they want on there. You can put the games they want on there. And then you can put the things that you want them to have on there. And they'd be able to use this all the time. And they laughed at me. That same school has practically an iPad in every kid's hands now.
Yeah. It is so great for our kids. All of those, you know. That is great. And what's your favorite sport?
I'm going to stick with hockey. It's Chris's favorite sport. Okay. when he was in grade school, a guy came up to us and said, I don't know, I just got this job as a mascot for this hockey team. He has no idea that this mascot we go see every game has known him since he was like in fifth grade. He has no idea that he knows this guy's daughters. I think they were girls. Since they were like in kindergarten and he was in fifth grade, he has no idea that he knows the family, has no idea who it is. They see each other across the lobby and just point at each other and run over and give each other fist bumps and stuff. He goes to these hockey games for that mascot. I have no idea how to ever explain to him that he's known this guy for forever.
Oh, wow. Well, he doesn't have to. He knows him both ways, right?
Yep. Well, eventually something's going to happen. We're going to get a new guy inside that suit, but he knows him. And he gets 10 tickets a year, which makes him a season ticket holder, which means this year, since they're in the playoffs, he's got playoff tickets. We've got tickets Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Wow.
So I'm trying to figure out how to get from State Special Olympics in Bloomington, Illinois, back to Chicago for a hockey game.
Good luck on that one. Now, are you a coach too, or are you just bringing Chris to the state games?
For Chris, I am not a coach.
Okay.
For Camelot, where I work, I am a coach.
You are a coach.
We have not put anybody out at a Special Olympics event yet. We will be starting next year, and I will be one of the coaches.
Well, that's awesome. Congratulations.
As if I needed another thing in my...
Another job. You need another job. So what, if you had two words to... if you could use only two words to describe Chris, what would they be?
My friend.
Oh, I like that. That's awesome.
Well, he doesn't even call me Dad much anymore. He calls me Tom.
Oh, he does.
And even when he introduces me to somebody, he says, this is my dad, Tom, puts his hand around my shoulder. I don't know where the friend-parent divide actually is anymore. Buddy.
That's awesome. So did you have anything else that you wanted to share that I didn't ask?
Yeah, two words. I'll give you back two words. For every parent, don't panic.
Don't panic.
You can do it. If I can do it, you can do it.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for being with us today and being our dadvocate for 2019. We appreciate everything you do, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Parenting Special Needs Purposeful Conversation Podcast. You can subscribe, view, and rate this podcast on iTunes. Make sure to subscribe to our free magazine for parents raising a child with special needs. We help guide you by providing strategies, information, and inspiration. You can also reach out and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.